This is Due by Friday, a weekly challenge podcast with Merlin Mann, Alex Cox, and Max Temkin. This week's challenge, see Into the Spider-Verse.
Is Max doing a remix? What's happening?
Hello.
Were you rubbing your beard against the microphone?
No, hang on. It's screwed up here.
You sound like you're at President Obama's house. Alex, are you there?
I am. I was just waiting to see if you'd talk about me, and you didn't.
Oh. There we go. There we go. Okay. I'm hitting record. It's recording. I see the numbers going.
Oh. Can you get any more high mids in the mix? Jesus Christ. Are you on a burning building in London in 1940?
Hello, Mr. and Mrs. Mack, and all the citizens, let's go to press. I'm Max Temkin, I'm wringing my beard against this. I'm staying at President Obama's house here in Hawaii.
Oh, okay.
Happy New Year!
Oh, I miss
you
guys.
It doesn't sound good.
No, it sounds good. It sounds great. It sounds great. I didn't know Radio Shack was still open. My dream was always, when I was working at Radio Shack, how's it going, everybody?
It's going great.
I'm in the great state of California.
Oh.
It's fine. It's an okay state. Where are you? Can you say, for OPSEC reasons?
No, well, by the time this comes out, I'll be home and I'll be guarding my house with a loaded shotgun again. So I'm in Pike and Sam in Palm Springs.
Palm Springs. Oh, it's very dry there.
Yeah, Palm Springs is like a desert sort of retreat. You know, it's like upstate New York for New York. Palm Springs is to LA. It's like the where people go to, like, I don't know, like vacation and retire. We flew into LAX and drove because it's about it's not that it's like an hour and a half drive maybe, but Palm Springs is crazy. It's like the it's like a baby boomer holodeck. Yeah. Like it's just like neatly manicured, and there's like old timey candy shops and lots of like jam bands playing. You know, the Eagles and Beatles and things like that.
I feel like Paul Krugman could do a running piece series on the appearance of old-timey candy stores because it feels indicative of something. It might be the ultimate signifier of I wish black people didn't talk so much anymore.
Oh.
I think based on the variety and number of saltwater taffy flavors that we got on this trip, that it probably Trump's days in office are limited, if I had to extrapolate.
Oh, you're saying it's become a little too diverse.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, the thing with the candy shops, Merlin, is you've got walls and wheels.
Okay. And it's always been that way.
It's always been that way.
And you get a mix. Here's the thing is, this is, shows you how vibrant our economy is. Look at the price of gas going down. You got walls, you got wheels. But also just look at when you go to a candy store, you'll see that a lot of stuff in there is like pretty fucking generic. Like those shitty little dots on a strip. It's basically the dots on toilet paper thing. But you also get like corporate candy. It's a nice admixture that shows you the economy has never been better.
Well, and the thing with those is you're going to be eating a good amount of paper.
Oh, I'm listening now.
I'm listening.
Alex, do you know about this candy? I always thought this was like a deli candy.
No, I literally have no idea what you're talking about, and I thought I just fell asleep.
I'm going to say it's called Candy Dots.
It's like a roll of receipt paper, and it's all rolled up.
Yeah.
And then on the paper, there's little colored sugar dots. And what you're supposed to do is, are you supposed to peel them off, or you're supposed to pop them off with your mouth?
I mean, like a good clean boy would probably pick them off with his clean fingernails, but most people who are monsters, also, it kind of, if you can, I'll send it to you. It looks a little bit like somebody didn't try too hard filling in the SAT with some markers. But I think what you're supposed to do is you put them up, you get the receipt tape, and you put it like on your underbite, on your underteeth, and you go, "Kar," and you pull all the candies. So search for candy dots, Alex. This is right in your wheelhouse.
I'm seeing snow.
Candy buttons? Candy buttons.
Candy buttons.
That's a good name. That's going to be my new pole dancer name. Candy buttons.
This this look like someone fucked up and skipped a step in the factory, like, oh, we didn't take them off. And they're like, wait, this saves us like $5 million a year.
Oops, all receipt tape.
Oopsie poopsie. And then it just
What do kids like? A colored sugar will just extrude it onto a sheet of paper. They'll pop it off with their mouth.
Right. It's like an AI tried to delight a child.
I mean, you're eating about one Post-it note worth of paper every time you have those.
Oh, God.
Candy buttons. Stupid. Candy buttons. All right.
Candy buttons sounds like a 1950s like black stand-up.
Oh, right. Like a little bit ribald, does party records with boob jokes. Or maybe like a GOP spokeslady. Oh. So she comes in out, she's blonde.
Back in the day, I used to play the Laugh Factory with Candy Buttons.
Oh, Candy Buttons. It was always a good time with Candy Buttons. Yeah, yeah. Susie Porkshank. Oh, my God. The stuff that she would do. Thigh Meat Wilson. She was hilarious.
Oh.
What do you think? You think you'd like these, Alex?
I'm already trying to find them on Amazon, but it doesn't
Candy
look
buttons.
Like they're available. I feel like I'm going to have to venture to an old-timey shop to get these, like an artisanal candy place where they will offer me varieties of taffy that
you
I don't
You should wear
want.
A disguise, though. You and your partner should both wear mustaches, so you look like you fit in.
No.
Make America candy again.
Oh, my God. What about that? Okay, stop right there.
Hold on.
Now, that's a store. Make America candy again.
Oh,
and we sell. Here's the idea. Okay. We're opening the store. And, you know, Veronica and I went to see, this is the challenge this week was to see the Spider-Man movie. Yes. And before we saw it, we went to the candy store by the, we went to the fancy theater with the candy store downstairs. That's the store. It Sugar.
Mm-hmm.
It's we've talked about this, right? The store is IT. Apostrophe SUGAR.
Oh no, that's very upsetting. It's sugar. It's sugar.
Oh, we have not talked about this because I would.
I think we did. I know. It's the kind of place you see in airport. It's like an airport candy store.
Oh, it's the worst.
Now I want this store to sell. I want candy buttons. In that store. I want that to be Make America Candy Again. Make candy great again. I want old timey treats and delights. You know, I want like a lemon. I don't want a lemon head. I want a lemon hard candy shaped like a little football.
That's a good idea. You could put all the black jelly beans in the back of the store, and then all the brown M&Ms would have to go through a standard federal gateway.
Look at this promotional photo. They're already like halfway there. Other than woman is at the front at the bus, but still,
is that a real photo?
Yeah, it is a real photo at their official website.
was this the picture taken by diabetes?
instead of that old timey candy paradise, what it is like it's 80% of the store is given over to like novelty products. Mm-hmm. Like they sold like a little jar called like it was like atomic urine or something, and it was just like a yellow jar. Like it's all jokes.
Oh, like candy puns.
Yeah, like you know, like boner gummies for your bachelorette party.
Ugh.
I'm just saying it bummed me out that there wasn't enough. You know, they did have some big bulk bins and they had some good, you know, gummies and whatnot. But I think this is a big opportunity for us that we could start Make Candy Great Again.
Big bulk bins. I would like about a pound of boners, please.
Oh.
I'd like some candy boners. That's pretty good, too.
I think this is going to appeal to the Trump voter demographic. I think, because what do they like? They like big, they like sugar.
They love obvious jokes.
Yeah. They're going to buy any garbage. I mean, they buy like Trump, like commemorative, like plates and coins, right? They're going to buy our candy. If it's a MAGA candy, I think they're going to come wheeling in there on their mobility scooters. They're going to have a big bag and they're going to fill it with our old timey candy. And what does candy buttons cost?
Oh, to make less than a nickel. You can get all of them for a nickel and then it's all markup. But you know what? It supports the troops.
Mm.
Right? Don't you think?
Oh.
And the first responders, yeah.
Yeah, well, one penny of every purchase goes to support our first responders. And here's the thing is, I think you're going to call it, I think it's not, okay, it's not candy buttons anymore. It's called There Are Only Two Genders Candy Dots.
Only pink and blue.
So you're triggering, so every time you buy it, you're triggering the lips.
Oh, that's so smart. It's a four quadrant candy hit. That's good.
This is a, I think, listen, I know that there's, I know that there's some Silicon Valley type people who listen to this.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that you have no morals, and I think that there's a lot of money to be made here. So please reach to us. I really think we could do this. I don't want to be conservative here, but in terms of the cost, but I think we could probably do this for $10 million.
I mean, I think that would be what you call seed money. There's two parts I think we need to add. The second part, I don't want to get too far into, is we have to add blockchain. But the first part is it should be a little bit like Hooters. And you got hot triple D chicks dressed like Donald Trump. Like, or maybe just like oversized shorts, but they have some kind of very, very tiny brassiere and a red hat.
I think you're onto something.
No. That has been... but they can go to Hooters. What you need is someone who looks like me or somebody with a pink pussy hat serving them. And it's like, oh, you have officially been owned. You, sir, are serving me.
It's all millennials. It's all millennials working there, and they're unhappy.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
What if it's a millennium and he's got, you know, okay.
He's got his vape pen.
Remember the Starbucks Reserve stores, and we found their dress code that required them to wear like trilbies and sort of hipster hats, like wide brim hats and things like that. Okay, that's who's going to be behind the counter, right? It's going to be your Starbucks Reserve store hipster, and every time you come to make a purchase, they're going to like compliment you on your taste in music, or ask where you got an article of clothing. Ooh, where'd you get those cowboy boots?
I also love the idea of, even though it's completely unnecessary, you get to leave a name like you would at Starbucks, mm-hmm. and then they have to write it. They have to write it on your bag.
Yep.
Mr. Trump. Mr. Trump, and they say it over and over, and they act like they can't hear you. Mr. Trump. Mr. Trump, your pussy buttons are ready. Mr. Trump. Oh, I guess that's me. And Charlie Kirk's there in a diaper on a little stage. Like you may be playing acoustic guitar. That'd be so fun.
Aw.
Yeah.
We're saying happy Christmas.
Even to the haters.
We should probably have convertible notes. That seems like a pretty important.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah. Oh, you know what? Can we also bring in, I don't want to belabor this, but I mean, I've been watching a lot of cable news and basketball, and I'm learning a lot about who they think I am on these things. This is just as true for CNN. I don't watch a ton of Fox. I do watch, but I'm noticing across the board, I mentioned this in a tweet the other day, but there's obviously a huge number of ads for costly American automobiles,
mm-hmm.
but there's also a lot of things for the failing human body. So could you come in there and get a colorful, candy-colored, nearly painless catheter set?
And the pillows. We're going to have the pillow guy.
My pillow. The guy with the cross. The guy with the prominent cross. Yeah. My pillow.
I can't remember what awful retrograde thing Tucker Carlson did now, but all his advertisers left, and the only one left is My Pillow. And not only do they run like they literally run like 120 seconds like My Pillow infomercial.
He like filled in the holes with his My Pillow ads.
Tucker Carlson now has the CEO of My Pillow come on his program to talk about pillows and politics.
Wait, why aren't we doing this though? Like we could make candy great again could be the alt right Squarespace, and just because everybody's pulling their sponsorships for everything, you just show up on all the other shows.
You've added a fifth quadrant. It also, it's backfill ads. Yes.
I want to be all right Squarespace.
Have you seen that?
That's so smart, Alex. When the number one anti-Semitic podcast, I think when that one guy who was the host was revealed to be Jewish, that they probably lost a lot of their advertisers.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
ZipRecruiter's like, I feel like I've been misled. I thought that this was the number one anti-Semitic podcast, and you're telling me that one of the hosts was Jewish? No way.
That's an FTC thing. You're supposed to be honest about your anti-Semitism and your ranking. But you see a lot of things for financial services. You get a lot of refis. There's one that's been a little puzzling to me. I don't know if you've seen this commercial. It's for some kind of blah, 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 something, something financial services. Because nobody's just a bank anymore. It's always got to be all higgledy-piggledy. And it's an ad for this place. And have you seen this? It's like a bad SNL parody where they have like a coffee. They have a barista. And like, this is the new Providential or whatever. And it's all millennials milling around in what looks like a combination of a food court and a car dealership, but they've got a barista.
Oh, well, Merlin, that's what you call a third place.
A third place.
Mm. That's the thing is you're not a lot of times when we're out, we're out milling around. And we're like, let's go hang out at the bank. That's a third place.
Make America candy again. Okay.
you meet a nice young woman on Tinder, and you're like, where should we meet up? Oh, let's go to the bank.
Okay, and once again, you go there, and there's some hipster doofus with a vape pen who has to work at the Make America Candy Again refi booth. And of course, he can't afford a house because he blew all his fucking money on avocado toast. And he's very unhappy because your credit is so good, you're gonna get your refi and your catheters from the vape pen guy. And that is going to own the libs, wouldn't you say?
Is there still do you still see a lot of ads for reverse mortgages? That used to be something I would see of like, here's the one trick that Obama doesn't want you to find out about. You get a reverse mortgage today. What is a reverse mortgage? I'm actually not 100% sure.
Do you know, Alex, have you ever done a reverse mortgage on your apartment? Do you know how that works?
Many times, but can you explain it to me?
Well,
that's where you put money up and then you own the bank.
I think a reverse mortgage is different from a second mortgage. I want to stipulate I don't understand anything about money, but I think what it is you have a fair amount of equity in your home on your 30-year loan, and I think it's something where basically they give you some money but then they keep your house when you die. I think it's something like that.
That could be a pretty aggressive expansion plan for Make Candy Great Again.
Well, and also your stupid kids don't get your house. You pwn your kids too.
Yeah, well, it's gonna, oh, I see. But what I'm saying is, where are we gonna go? I mean, we're gonna open a few of these with our $10 million of seed money and our convertible notes.
Mm-hmm.
But then what?
Because
we're gonna need a lot of them.
Mm-hmm. A lot of inventory.
We're gonna need them in every neighborhood. So I'm thinking we do these reverse mortgages. People eat the sugar and they die.
And we get their house. And then we turn their house into the latest Make Candy Great Again. Because there's no zoning laws anymore. It's fucking, the purge out there. You can have a candy store anywhere you want.
This is, I'm telling you, I just listened to, so we've been doing a lot of driving, and we just listened to the entire podcast, The Dream. Did you guys listen to that?
Yes.
So good.
For me, for sure, that's the best podcast of the year. I got it in right under the wire. And we finished it on the 31st, and god damn, that was the best podcast of 2018.
It's such a journey, because the first episode is like, okay, good, and then it gets better and better, and then at the end, you can barely sit still, you're squirming so bad with the way these interviews are going, but the way they bring in the personal
they have
component.
The guy from the Trade Association.
Oh.
Yeah. He's slick. That guy is slick.
Yeah. Nah, I thought he was all right. Anyway, it's about the multi-level marketing schemes, which I just really, I don't know, I just haven't. So we talk about them sometimes on Dubai Friday, but boy, was that.
I've been obsessed with them for 20 years. I'm obsessed with
them. It was something.
Well, the one where what obsesses me about them is something they got into. When they talked about that one company, the first one, the company from the 60s where the guy made the albums. Yeah, so the idea is you sell, what was it called? Holiday something. But, you know, they sell whatever they sell. Who fucking cares?
Holiday magic.
The beauty part was, though, once you get in, it's very clear the only way you're going to make money and move up is to recruit new people. But then they have a secondary MLM inside the MLM, which is so beautifully elegant, which is you pay people in your upline to take MLM classes to get better at MLM. It's the most Ouroboros business, and there's something about that just breaks my brain in the greatest way. So maybe you can come in and you could become, when you come in and you buy your candy and your catheters or reverse your mortgage, you also get the opportunity to become one of our partners.
That's right. Yes. And the other thing that was really depressing about The Dream is like they get into how, you know, obviously Betsy DeVos is Secretary of Education, but Trump ran MLMs, like a bunch of his... You know,
her brother was an Amway guy, right? Was that right?
Well, the DeVos family, that's why she's extremely wealthy, is they started Amway. Yeah, I mean, it's MLM. The MLM people went from almost being regulated out of existence because of doing blatant fraud to now they just control the United States government. Like, we are the MLM country. We have the MLM president. Like, we're just the MLM people. But you know, that's I see that. As the proprietor of Make Candy Great Again, I think that this is an opportunity.
And also, the hardest challenge for us as we bootstrap this very important operation is it's going to be difficult to find large groups of people who are willing to willfully behave in ways that are utterly antithetical to what would actually improve their life based on the idea of a dream of success that's utterly unattainable. If we could only find a group of people who would deliberately take steps to ingratiate themselves to a brand that's ultimately about how much they suck. And you could have a gold toilet. We'll have a gold toilet. We got to have a gold toilet.
Oh, yeah.
This is a license to print money.
You know what? I was thinking that, too, during the dream is, like, it's only a matter of time before there's, like, a popular podcast that goes, like, full MLM. Because you do have a big audience, and they will kill for you.
Interesting. So you want to walk that line.
Or a YouTuber. Like, if PewDiePie started selling some sort of MLM nonsense, like, it would be crazy.
How do you walk that narrow line between success and your downline and people who actively want to wear your skin? It's a very tight, tightrope walk.
If we told everyone on the Discord that they had to buy $100 worth of Herbalife or they were getting kicked off the Discord tomorrow, I think we'd move a lot of Herbalife.
Alex, did you say you're looking forward to someone wearing your skin? Is that what I got from that?
You're not opposed.
It's like cannibalism. You're not opposed.
I'm just here mumbling. Just telling my stories. Challenge.
Alex, is my cat alive?
I'm not responsible for your cat. Shut up, Roland. Yes, though, I did visit her this morning. She's alive.
Aww.
Yeah.
Did you send photos?
You know, I think Maddie is in possession of them, but she really is kind of my new problematic fave because she loves It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and that's just not a show for nice people that I watch.
Are you talking about the cat or Matchy? Who are you talking about?
The cat. I told an almost coherent story. Max is out of town. Matchy is watching the cat with a friend, and now I say hello and goodbye to Max's cat every day. That's the whole story, and we watched It's Always Sunny together. Story.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh my. That's... Really.
We get a push notification on our phone when the cat takes a shit.
Oh, so because so we have good.
It's great. So we're like out. We'll be out in our vacation. Our phones will start buzzing, and we'll look down and be like, "Oh, the cat took a shit."
She took me a doodle on her basket.
I have this new theory of they're really, people are like, oh, why don't you like cats? That's because they are either just perfect, absolute, just flawless cats like Max's, or just absolute complete disasters. I don't think they're actually in the same like gene pool. Maybe a couple of them are, and that's how we're getting the weird like feral things. But they're either perfect creatures, and it's, you see how the Egyptian gods would worship them, or one's literally found in a dumpster.
Yeah, I get very envious. It's one reason. Well, the main reason I deleted my Instagram, of course, was because Facebook. But also, like, I just got tired of seeing everybody's perfect life and everybody's cat that acts normal. Everybody, oh, look at this precious angel. Did you see the cat? It's the cat that like pets the dog. Or no, the dog pets the cat, and then the cat hugs the dog. Have you seen that one? Stuff like that. It makes me so angry. It's so sweet, and I love it, and it makes me so happy, but it just makes me angry. Our cat just shits and stares at us. It shits on the floor while it's staring at us. It makes eye contact. It's like Louis C.K. It just wants to keep eye contact the whole time. So I'll hear this. So I'm trying to sleep. I'm trying to sleep in the morning, and here's what I hear. Which is, I call the telltale scratching. And that means that the cat is about to drop a duke in the hallway, or in the other hallway, or over here in the dining room, or here on the landing. All this, like the stations of the cross for our angry masturbating cat. And you hear and then you hear three hard little dukes hit the floor. Tunk, tunk, tunk. And now I have a new job. And then she runs. I don't know if it's out of guilt or fear, but then she goes. And you hear this scattering as she runs away from where she left her dukes. And I can't have that. I don't want Instagram anymore. I don't want to see somebody's perfect cat. My cat's a monstrosity. And I love her so much. She's such a sweet, precious angel.
You should really look into cat Foley work. I think the Rachel Maddow show needs to check out your
back
resume.
Back when I was on the Chitlin Circus, I used to work with cat Foley work all the time. Her and Candy Buttons. back meat persimmon on that body Chitlin circuit. Did I say Chitlin Circus? I don't think that's a thing.
Oh,
how's everybody doing? How's the new year?
What did you do for New Year's, Alex? This is the first year. So, you know, so this is the 10 year anniversary of us creating the first prototype of Cards Against Humanity, which we made for a New Year's party, and I guess it would be in 2008, 2009, and we made it, and it was really fun, and then, you know, we, like, put it on the internet, and it got popular, and then every New Year since then, we've had a big New Year's party where we, like, play Cards Against Humanity, and because that's, like, the anniversary of the game, and back then we were all in college, so we'd all come home from college, and that was our only time of the year where we were all in town and we could work on Cards Against Humanity, and then we just kept doing that, and now we're all, like, grown-ass men with, like, families, and we'd still, like, every New Year's, everyone, like, flies into Chicago, and we, like, trudge through the snow, and we sit around this table, and we're, like, miserable and cold, and everyone wishes they were home for the holidays, and we work on cards, and last year, we were in, like, a pit of despair. Like, these retreats get really grim, and it's also, it gets dark at, like, 2 p.m, like, it's not a great time, and we're, like, man, like, I wish we didn't have to meet now and do this retreat. And then we all sort of stare at each other and we're like, why do we do these retreats now?
Oh, interesting.
Like, we just realized, like, we don't actually have to meet over New Year's. And so we just didn't this year. This is the it's literally in 10 years. It's the first year that we haven't had a retreat and a big party for New Year's. So Alex is always, like, semi, or at least for the last couple of years, has, like, semi had to work on New Year's because we have these, like,
only semi.
Well, there's
throwing a party drinking for 200, involved. Throwing a party for 200 people. Oh no!
I recall that there was some drinking and possibly trying to arm wrestle me involved in one of these work evenings. But,
well,
you know.
I also recall winning. So who? Mm. Oh yeah, that was
your
fun.
You were all hulked out on.
Oh, she hopped up on energy
on
drinks.
Champagne, yes, that's what yeah. called the hawk.
Yeah.
Ooh. No, this New Year's, we had the same like revelation. Matchy and I were like, oh, we need to figure out a party to go to. And we're like, wait, no, we don't.
No, so, you don't.
Yeah, no. So we just went to a friend's house and we watched Kiki's Delivery Service and my new favorite film, Venom, which is just, oh, that Tom Hardy. And ate some special cookies and went to bed around 1 a.m. It was perfect.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Sounds pretty good.
It was lovely. How about the two of you?
What'd you guys...
I'm just thinking about what you said, Max. I'm going to interrogate it just a little bit more. Like, that's a weird feeling. So you've had two kinds of emptiness is too strong a word, but on the one hand, you go like, wait a minute. We've been doing this. Did I realize we're still doing this? And then you go, do we really need to do this? Then we don't do it. How did you feel like when you didn't have that to do? Was it weird because you're so used to doing that, not having to think about it?
I literally was like, I don't know what people did. Since I was a sophomore in college, what I've done for New Year's is work on Cards Against Humanity with my eight friends, and I was like, I don't know what people do on New Year's that's not that, so we had to figure something out. It was weird. It's like if you just discovered that Christmas existed and you were like, what are the customs of this holiday?
Oh man, grab a sandwich, it's complicated. But that sounds like a good one, Alex. It sounds like you had a nice time, and you had some, what you're saying is you ate marijuana.
No,
and you
I didn't watched say that. They're just very special cookies that my friends.
What the fuck
prepared.
Does that mean, Alex?
That
what
they
does
were
that mean?
Special. It means they were prepared by Trent's special friend, and that they were
did
special.
Do you mean, to be, do you mean
love.
To be this bad at what you're doing, or
I,
is this? You had a special cookie.
I had a special cookie. Okay. Here's the thing. The people who listen to this podcast either know it's weed or they're just like, oh, Alex had a special cookie. How nice. You don't need to specify.
My guess is that it wasn't weed because that's illegal in the state of Illinois.
Exactly.
But it was probably something legal. It was probably something legal like kratom and CBD.
Oh, right.
No,
it was a cake of
dose.
Powdered CBD and kratom.
No, no unsafe dose.
Was it a legal
and,
copy?
Oh,
of
and
that?
synthetic marijuana.
Has anybody tried that? I want to try it so badly. I'm so curious.
Spice?
The kids are calling it spice. Huh. What you don't know about synthetic marijuana may kill you.
That seems weird because, like, I don't read the trades, but, like, it is, hasn't marijuana gotten a lot better quality and less costly over time? Is there a need for synthetic marijuana?
That's what seems curious.
just that it's legal. And okay. So you can buy it in gas stations and things like that. Alex, what was the one that was really popular when I was in college? and it got you hot. You would smoke it, and you'd smoke like a pinch of it, and it would just, you'd like trip out for 20 seconds in a horrible dysphoric high.
The YouTube, Salvia? Salvia,
that was the one. Yeah, that's right. Salvia. Yeah, I haven't seen people do, I mean, maybe kids are still doing it, but I haven't seen people do Salvia in many, many years. But that was a bad, not fun drug that was very ubiquitous and popular when I was in college. Everyone was doing Salvia all the time.
I genuinely have never done it or seen anybody done in real life. So there was a while I'm like, is this just like a YouTube challenge that people are doing? It was Salvia. So confusing. Have you not seen like a Salvia freakout? It looks terrifying.
Salvia, also known as Sage of the Diviners.
Oh, yeah. This does not look fun.
Seen by chewing, smoking, or as a tea. Huh. Well, yeah, I remember the name. It feels like there's always some kind of like au courant. I'm trying to remember. Like even back when I was in college, there would be some herb that suddenly became very popular for some kind of combination of like insight, like pharmaceutical therapeutic use, and a combination of that and getting you high. Salvia.
Yeah, like if you huff this for long enough, you'll get dizzy and fall over, and then kids will buy it in little baggies.
It's like whippets in a leaf. La la la. Okay. All right.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Boy, am I watching Survivor.
Have either of you met Coach yet?
Yeah, I've met Coach in 2 seasons.
Oh, wait, what's the second season?
Coach is in 3 seasons of the show.
Oh, fuck, yes.
Have you guys met Cochran yet?
Yes, no. I met Cochran in a full season, and I just, no spoilers, I just met Cochran doing a little fly-in on Dingling Island. He came to Dingling Island to give somebody some advice.
Oh, I see. So far, I think the best season of Survivor that I've seen so far is a season, a returning Cochran season called Fans versus Favorites.
Okay. Mm. And it's like probably in the 30s.
Yeah, I think so. Late 20s or 30s. But it's in the HD era. The modern Survivor era, and that's probably the best season I've seen so far. I'm watching the Hot People versus Strong People versus Smart People season, which is pretty good.
What do they call it?
They call it Beauty versus Bronze versus Brains.
Dinguses versus Doofuses. Dinguses versus Doofuses versus Dinglings. Have you met Robert Playswell, Johnny Paycheck? Have you met that one guy yet? He's got a funny name. He's got Johnny Fairplay. Have you met him?
Boston Rob?
I love Boston Rob. This is a different guy. This guy is the Dingling of the Dinglings, and I think his name is Johnny Playswell or Johnny Playfair.
If I had told you a year ago that this would become a Survivor fan podcast, that's a weird turn of events, right?
I would have asked you to delete your account.
It would have.
But it's so good.
It is so good.
It's a really bad show.
Well,
it's a very, very bad show.
I disagree. Because I figured out the other day why.
Because you're opposite girl.
No,
you
I'm
used
not.
To be jazz girl, and now you're opposite girl.
No,
you like the opposite of whatever the good thing
no.
is.
No.
Hey,
yes.
Internet, what do you think of me? Do-do-do-do-do. I feel so unhealthy from all this internet. What do you guys think? Do-do-do-do-do.
Well, while Merlin is gone, Max, please watch the video that I've just sent you.
Okay, I'm hitting play. What is that?
Exactly!
What is it? Oh, what is that? A little silverfish or something?
Oh, that is a gigantic centipede. That is not like, oh, there's a little silverfish in the shower or toilet or something like that. Oh, there's a gigantic centipede oh, God, it's huge. So then I just flushed and left. You're welcome. It's a problem solver. Oh, it looks like
somebody sent me a picture of a toilet.
Please watch this video. Max seems unfazed by it. I am very upset. Oh my God!
Was it a millipede?
It didn't happen to me. It's not going to happen.
Is it a millipede? What is it?
I don't know.
That'd be very
it probably means something about the new year.
Oh my God. Look at this thing. Oh my God.
I would suggest overthinking it. Oh, look at that.
Oh my God.
Oh wow. It's got real long legs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that before or after you peed, Alex?
Oh no. I saw it. I flushed and I left there. I'm still I no longer have to pee. The window is gone and I'm happy that it's gone. Oh,
now it lives
my
in a fat burg. Wow.
Oh, God.
It's probably gaining strength in the fatberg. I mean, it's going to have... It's going to join a colony of other flushed insects.
It's going to be like Bane. It's going to become super strong from the fatberg. Born in it.
Can you imagine, though, if I sat down and then it bit me, I would be like a pedo person. Wait.
Excuse me? Is that how that happens, Alex?
No.
It starts at a young age, you get bit and become a pedo?
No.
It's called, in England, they call it a nonce.
Okay. All right.
Does this have to do with your thing with Hermione?
Wait. No, that's not fair. That's not fair. I was 10 years old. I was 10 years old.
Do you think that really changes it? Does that change it, Alex?
Yeah.
Does that make it right?
Oh, God. For example, I thought I had a crush on the girl from My Girl when I was younger, but then I watched a trailer for My Girl and was like, haven't you ever had that?
Anna Chomsky?
I don't know. She was the kid.
I want to say The Thick of It. She's in one of those Iannucci shows.
As a grown-up.
Not as a pedo-sot young actress that you're attracted to.
Oh, my God.
Anna Chomsky. I want to say Anna...
Anna Chomsky.
Chomsky.
Good for you for not changing your last name. Oh, she's 10 years older than me. That makes sense, actually.
That makes it different.
Oh, there we go. No, I got it. Oh my God. This is my childhood just unfurling before me. This movie. There was a movie with the other person I found very attractive as a youth, Christina Ricci. Not so much anymore, but there was a...
Not anymore? Why not anymore?
She's not my type. I don't know.
You don't like Wednesday Addams?
Christina Ricci, she looks like a 90s alien. You know the 90s alien?
Yeah, like you draw on a notebook.
Okay,
she's
sure.
All forehead.
No. Like she looks like,
that was,
like something.
I think that was that was a very big look in 1995, was being almost completely forehead.
Yep. I'm also guilty of that. The ponytail, you get back real, real tight, and you just show off that greasy forehead.
It looks like she looks like a monster factory where they took all the face and they just scrunched it down real small, down low.
No middle sliders. I'm not familiar with their work. I think we're back.
Oh,
point of something. Can I make a suggestion?
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay. First, I want to stipulate that last night I recorded an episode of the podcast Reconcilable Differences with friend of the show, John Syracuse, that will air next Thursday. And a lot of the show was talking about Survivor. I finally got to wadir him on his Survivor background. We talked about you, Max. We talked about the learnings that you shared with us. I talked about what I've learned about the rules from looking at Wikia and legal documents. It was really interesting.
Wait, is this the same as the episode that I got a little sneak listen to?
No, this is a new one. Comes out Thursday. I'll say it to you.
Oh, it's fucking Survivor Part 2? Hell yes.
Oh, if we were to get one that fell off the back of the truck, I would not be mad.
Well, I mean, you're right. We talked about it a lot in the previous episode, but in this one, we both kind of caught ourselves up on how I've kind of warmed up to Jeff Probst, his opinion on finally finishing season 37, and we just, we talked about it and stuff. So, but in prepping for that, I had to, and I'm wondering if we could all do this, if it's not difficult. I chillingly collated how much of this show we have watched in the last 3 weeks. And I was going to, can we compare and contrast what seasons we've watched?
Oh, sure.
Sure.
Now, Alex, you've watched, two or three?
I've watched three, but I watched one of them when I watched Heroes versus Villains when I was sick, which I think is the
so
one
good.
Max. I remember almost like literally none of it.
You got Russell Hantz.
I have no idea who that is.
Beard guy with the hat?
I was in like a total, I have no idea what the fuck happened those like 3 days. But
Parvati
I watched
Shallow.
David versus Goliath, as well as the Brazil season, which is the first one with Coach. I just went into Amazon Prime and It was like one of the last days I was sick. I just was like, find Survivor into the Apple TV and got the first one that came up. And it was really good. I'm a fan of TJ. I really, really liked it. I watched the entire thing.
TJ in Heroes versus Villains, the worst. He declared the worst move ever made in Survivor history in Heroes versus Villains.
Which was the worst move? Sorry.
He gives Russell the idol.
No. I haven't seen it yet.
I thought it was Heroes versus Villains.
I watched it. But I did not see it, Merlin.
So
I did not
versus
play
Villains,
the dragon.
Brazil, and what else did you have?
David and Goliath. So I've only
kind
really
of two,
seen
kind
two
of three.
Seasons. Yeah, yeah.
What do you got, Max?
Okay, so I watched David versus Goliath. I watched Ghost Island. I watched Heroes versus Healers versus Hustlers. I watched Millenniums versus Gen X. I watched Cagayan.
Oh my God.
I watched Cameroon. I watched Heroes versus Villains. And I think I might have watched some of these other ones. I watched Borneo. So I watched 8 seasons of Survivor in the last month.
Oh my God.
Now I feel better. Well, I don't feel good.
But
Wait, where's Fans versus Favorites?
It's a terrible show.
I do not.
I think I said that.
Even after an episode of Top Chef, I feel a little bit dirty. Like, I'm like, man, I love these scallops, but this didn't make me a better person. I don't feel guilty after watching Survivor.
I am perpetually, here's how I've watched so much of this. First of all, I've been flying a lot in the last month, and this is a great show for airplanes. Like, it is the exact amount of sort of brain cells that I have to rub together on an airplane is like enough to follow an episode of Survivor and play like an iPhone game or something. So that's number one. And then I'm also like, I'm always on the lookout for shows that I can watch while I do something else, because I have a lot of work that I need to do that is like data entry or answering emails, and Survivor is a great show to have on that I can just because it's like other reality TV. They recap everything that happens like 10 times as it's happening, right? So if your attention fades for 3 minutes while you're working on something and then you come back, you're going to come back to a recap of a guy describing what just happened. And as for that reason, like, I really like watching the Bachelor franchise or Shark Tank or Survivor while I'm working. Like, those are right in my sweet spot of shows that I watch while I'm like also sitting in front of the computer doing some kind of work.
I agree. It can absolutely be watched like that. But when I was sick, this is the first time I think I like watched the show, and I was not bored. I wasn't. There are some. They do repeat everything over and over again, but the editing is so good. You know that they're manipulating the edit, as any reality show does. But the fact that someone can pick out a little nod somewhere, it's like, oh, these people are really good at crafting a story that, sure, it still goes down super easy. You can have an IQ of -10 and still enjoy it. But
you can appreciate it on so many levels. And I'm to the point where I'm overthinking so much of this show that I dare not look away. But like Max says, and like you're saying, you can choose to engage on almost any level you want. I mean, you might be really into the challenges. You might be really into the gossip and backstabbing. But like, once you start overthinking it the way that I'm overthinking it, it's like it weirdly draws you in.
Mm-hmm. Well, I watched David vs. Goliath like that, where I knew every person in the cast and every vote. I was trying to work out how everybody voted in every vote, and I mean, I was really engaged with it. And there are other seasons I've watched so half-heartedly.
Do you know to stay till the end when they show you the votes? I didn't learn that until too late.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. No, but I like to know as it's happening. I'm trying to count. I'm trying to figure out where the lines are. Like, that's kind of my little game for myself, is like, can I predict how the vote is actually going to come out? And sometimes the edit is good enough that you can work it out, even if there's a twist. Mm-hmm. But because you like get enough information as the viewer. I like those ones where it's a little mystery that you can solve. Then there's other seasons where I'm paying attention so little that they'll vote someone off who was boring, and I'll be like, I literally don't know who that was.
That's happened every season. There's somebody where we didn't even, it's like, not Zelig, but it's like, there's time where my wife and I are like, they'll do the headshot, the talking head with somebody. We'll be like, wait a minute, it's episode 7. Who is this person? Like, I have no idea who this person is.
Right.
But as the seasons go on, I think they get better at that. because in a lot of shows, when someone suddenly gets a ton of screen time, you're like, oh, they're the next to go.
Syracuse had talked about that and how they twist it up over time, where if you get too used to the idea, because I had said that, oh, I think when they get too much, if you get too much screen time in episodes 2 and 3, it means you're either a super dingling or somebody who's going to make it to the end.
Yep.
And it's not all, it doesn't, I think that's not always true. You're right. They do get better with each season at like mixing this up.
I've just become obsessed with The Craft. Like, sure, I've only watched 2 seasons, but I have read more about Survivor than I have actually watched Survivor.
How do they know? I mean, how do they know how, at what point, think about having to, so you know about the Dream Team that like tests all the obstacles and all that kind mm-hmm. of stuff, helps develop the challenges, the interns. But like, my mind boggles with like the logistics, something I imagine appeals to you, Alex, the logistics of this, of knowing at this point, there's so, it's like calculus. At this point in the season, there will be this many people left. When do we do the merge? If we do the merge, because we don't always do the merge. Mm-hmm. How do we mix mm-hmm. this up? How do we know how? What kind of challenge goes at which point, given how many people will be in there and how important immunity is? Because there's some of those challenges where they winnow down, right? From everybody to 5 people to 3 people, right? That kind of thing. And like just the logistics of doing that and then having to move all that shit around. All those puzzle pieces mm-hmm. and getting them underwater. And like mm-hmm. one of the things you learn when you read about this is everything takes everything we see as being a few minutes apparently takes hours or a day mm-hmm. to do. Like everything you see, tribal council takes hours and hours and hours. Each challenge takes hours, supposedly. But yeah, the more you think about it, the more you really process how crazy it is.
Even the talking heads, they don't have control of the environment. So it's like they turned producing a reality show to like 11 hardness, because you need to get those talking heads in and you need the consistency. But it's like, oh, okay, we need to evacuate the island for 3 days, and it completely changes how they produce the game.
In terms of like continuity, yeah. like what are you wearing, how dirty are you,
yeah,
that
how
kind of stuff.
Did it rain? Like it's a logistics yeah. nightmare. And
yeah, ugh. Top Dress, and Top Chef don't deal with that. Yeah. You can see that they're shot way out of sequence a lot of the time.
Uh huh. Horny for logistics on Maine, as you would totally endorse.
Something else that here's a little inside tip from my pals who are involved in Survivor production. So I don't know exactly the season, but at some point, if you're, I don't know if you guys are watching the early seasons or not, but at some point it switches from Jeff Probst as host to Jeff Probst as executive producer. And there was a point in the progression of the show where Probst sort of took over and heavily became involved in the production and design of the show. And that's really when Survivor got excellent. And a lot of those challenges, like that he is the best. He is like he's a great game designer. I think just as evidenced by all of the crazy shit that they come up with for people to do that are like always interesting and fair and fun. He personally tests all of those games. And I think like another thing I like is like when you're watching it, people throw like they will do things the wrong way, right? They'll break the game and the challenges in a way that wasn't anticipated. And he is mm-hmm. the guy on the ground who there is no off-camera panel of producers and judges. It's Jeff Probst, and he has to make a judgment call about whether it's fair and sporting, whether he's going to let people do it. There was one season I watched where they were like standing on top of something. And it was like every 15 minutes you had to go up another level, so it got harder and harder. And then once you got to the top, you just stood there for as long as possible. And these two women were left, and they were both standing on top of this thing for like an hour and a half, and neither of them was going to give up. And so they were like, what if we agree to just do 1 foot? So we add like a fourth level beyond what the game design is, but we just agree to do it to hasten the challenge. And they right. asked Jeff, like, can we do this? And like, damn, like that guy is the host of a reality show. Like, why should he be equipped to talk, to make a snap decision about is that going to play on camera? Is it going to be fair for the game? Like, is it going to, you know what I mean? Like, there's so many mm-hmm. factors mm-hmm. to think through. And he did. He came up with a really fair way to do it. It's great.
Well, you would have compression. But still, I mean, if you make it too hard, it'll be like a second long and it's not that good. Like Syracuse says in previous seasons, there's a kind of challenges he refers to as the like, who wants it more challenges, where like hands on a hard body kind of thing we talked about. But you want something in between. If you could have somebody, like we just watched one last night with the challenge where you're on a pole. You stand on a pole with these indentations, and you basically hold the pole while the very edges of your feet are in these little notches.
Oh, my God.
And that goes for about an hour. Now, if that was too easy and it went for 5 hours, even with editing, that might not be the best TV. You need somewhere in between, I
mean, I loved the crucifixion thing.
The crucifixion with Christian was crazy.
Oh, my God. So good.
Can I just in passing point of information? I get so confused about all of these. So we've watched 37 David versus Goliath, 20 Heroes versus Villains, 16 Micronesia, 23 South Pacific, 25 Philippines, and 36, whatever that is right now. I think it's Dinglings versus Doofuses. The first one with Cochran, and I think with Coach, is 23 South Pacific. And I do recommend it. It's got a real good group. It's got Redemption Island. So check it out. It's good. And you can totally tell where Last Chance Kitchen comes from. They totally got that from Redemption Island.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll send you some links. And I might have gotten these from you, Max. But there's some links to where you can find the contract that they sign. And there's lots of stuff on Wikia about like the history of the general rules and how they've changed, when they've been broken, controversial changes to the rules that I think is a good read.
I have to say, I love sometimes in your life where you get into something and you're like, I wonder what the deal is with this. And then you get into it so much that you are browsing the Wikia for it. And that's a feeling. I like that when I discover something, like, you know, like when I got into Steven Universe and then I'm like up all night on the Steven Universe Wiki, like looking up every minor, you know, character and detail and everything. Like that's an exciting time. I love that.
Oh, I totally agree.
All right. Well, let's talk about our challenge. And then I got to go meet my parents at the date farm for breakfast.
The
date farm.
I hope it's the fruit. Dig Dug Challenge.
Slide right.
It's Merlin's challenge this week. What was it? I think we said it already.
Was it mine?
It was, I think. I don't know. Max's challenge?
No.
Not mine.
Merlin's.
Challenge this week. God, this week. Fuck me gently. This challenge is from maybe 5 or 6 weeks ago.
Yeah.
It was a much fresher concept. Well, okay, there's this upstart movie that you might want to check out. It's called Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. And the challenge was to go see that and be prepared to discuss it, which everybody has done since then.
Oh.
I still think there's a lot to say about this.
I don't have a lot to add to the Spider-Man like discourse, but I fucking love this movie. You know, I don't really like superhero. I don't think I enjoy watching superhero movies the same way I enjoy watching Survivor. Like, I think they're interesting, but they're not. I don't think it's like great art. And this was a really artful, good film. And there's a lot to chew on afterwards. I'm very eager to see it again. I did fall asleep during some of the fight sequences, but I'm going to try and watch it again and stay awake during
all
the fighting.
Sure, that was a Black Panther?
All those rhinos.
And I liked it. I liked one of my favorite details that I haven't seen anyone else notice is when they go into the multiverse, it's all CMYK separated. I don't know if anyone caught that, but it's kind of a fun nod.
Yeah, like
where
the registration will be off sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like it's just, but also like the color, like, you know, when it's New York is glitching out because the universe split or whatever, when the machine turned on, it's all CMYK. It's all like comic book print color, you know, the base colors the comic books are printed with. I just thought that was a fun, just, you know, it's like the level of detail that movie bothered to care about, that made it great.
How we covered, but worth mentioning, is just stuff like, well, there's all the stuff that everybody's talked about animating on the twos and all of that, which I still don't completely understand, but I think is very interesting to learn about. But just the decisions to do the different kinds of animation for different kinds of characters. And like in the case of Miles, the way that he's a character of CG, but how do you even talk about this without sounding stupid? It's like not a comic book movie, but it's a comic book as a movie. It's difficult to talk about, but you look and like once. So the first time I saw it was in the last row. And then when my daughter and I saw it at Alamo, we were in the first row. And in the first row, you can really, there's so much crazy detail with the Bende dots and the hatching and the lines on the faces and all that stuff. That's just so, it's so delightfully well done. What do you think, Alex?
I intentionally, I don't think I've really talked about this. I went full media blackout as soon as I saw the teaser trailer. So I had no idea who was in this movie. I did not know which Spider's Men were going to be in here. And I saw it last night at midnight. So, or like, I don't know when I saw it, but it was like the last screening because I wanted to come in fresh. So I'm sure mm-hmm. that I'm going to repeat a ton of the hashtag discourse. But I've been reading some stuff this morning and kind of I keep thinking of that Toy Story scene. You link to this GIF a lot of the sewing of Woody's arm back on.
Yeah.
They did not have to have Miles's like little Spider-Man suit.
No need for any of this to look as good as it looks. It's totally unnecessary.
Right. It was just shocking. And it's not that it's realistic. It's that mm-hmm. all of the levels of detail, you just know that someone's like, of course, this is a loose thread from a Halloween costume because it's totally shitty. But other than that, I, for once, was not like, okay, I could use fewer fight sequences. These sequences are better choreographed than I think anything I've seen in years. Not just in superhero movies, but just movies in general. Like, I was never confused about mm-hmm. what was going on. The camera follows and pans all made sense. It feels like it was shot with cameras. It felt like mm-hmm. they were shooting a comic book, and I adored every second of it. I did the thing where Max has talked about where I got out of the theater and my jaw was just kind of hanging open and I didn't really say anything for 20 minutes because that was a punch in the face.
The movie ends, first ends when he's on the bed and he's laying there and he's looking up, and then there's that little like, you know, oh my God, it's Gwen. What's that happening? But then even through the credits, through the entire thing, jaw dropping is the way to put it. And, you know, people say this sometimes. I think just because people like to be ejaculatory in their effusive praise. This is the first time in a really long time that I seriously considered, if I'd had the time, walking straight back in
yep.
and seeing the movie again.
Absolutely.
A second time. If I bought, you know, I've already pre-ordered Blu-ray and streaming for this. Because I'm real worried about what this is going to look like streaming. But utterly jaw-dropping. And, you know, one thing that's... Everything's such a cliche. You know, it's one thing, like, sort of to your point, Max, maybe, with the... with so many different kinds of movies, I think this was supposed to be my theme for last year, and now it's kind of unintentionally maybe a theme for this year. I'm trying to distinguish when how much of the enjoyment I get out of something comes from nostalgia, recognition, and irony. And
sidebar, should we talk about yearly themes in the after show?
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. Want to just masturbate the whole after show? All right, just something to chew on. Go on. I'm sorry.
No, we can
sorry,
do that. I don't understand your obsession with
I know,
certain
neither
things.
Do I. I know.
I don't
I
understand.
Either.
You get very... yes, I would be happy to talk about it.
Well, she got bitten by... You know, as you know, she got bitten by the radioactive centipede. And now she's a pet oach.
I'm a pee person. I'm a pee person.
No, you got bitten by a radioactive CGP gray. but here's the funny part, and this movie doesn't. It's not like this movie doesn't have references, Easter eggs. It's chock a block with those. But Max, don't you? I mean, I feel like when I'm watching like a superhero blockbuster, or you're watching, you know, even if you're not a comic book fan, when you're watching the superhero thing, you're waiting for the thing. You're waiting for that guy. You're waiting for Superman to tear open his shirt. Clark Kent, and you see the Superman logo. Like, you're waiting for the payoff.
Right.
You're waiting for all
right.
the touchstones. You're waiting for the catchphrases. You're waiting for all of those things. And so I just want to set aside Spider-Man for a minute and say that, like, you know, the best superhero movies are not, like, constituted solely of callbacks and just, you know, reiterating a theme. And they're certainly not beautifully crafted, whereas this one, the craft of this whole movie is so aggressive. I was like, yes, keep coming at me. Keep coming at me. Keep making it weirder. Keep, like, just the fucking spray painting in the subway scene like a wonder of, like, the way that his uncle is sitting and the way that the colors look and the advice that he gives him and the music that's playing. And the whole thing is like, like I said, the first day I saw it, I have never seen a mainstream movie quite like this. You could see a Tartovsky movie, or you could go see something like Hero. You could go and see like a Wire movie, Kung Fu movie. This movie was so visually overwhelming in the best way, But then the other point I want to make real quick. Now, when they do the funny bits and they do the call outs and they do the recognition, not only have they earned that, but there's always a fucking twist every time they do it. Okay, let's do this one more time. And you're like, yes, do this one more time. That's so fucking great. He's a pig that got bit. What, he's a spider that got bitten by a pig? And the pig is named Aunt May? Yes! Keep more. Because it earns every single one of them. Even the dumb bit of Sweatpants Spider-Man having a snowman for a head.
Oh my God, it was so good!
Because it was like a cartoon and they did it for a minute, but like, just conceptually, execution, storytelling, and just the visuals of this were like, it's, I don't want, there's no need for me to give this any award or adulation, except that, like, this is why movies are good. Like, something like this is why movies are good. I don't know if we'll feel that way in 10 years, but, like, I was overwhelmed in the best possible way, and I think about this movie every single day.
How many times did you cry?
At least 3.
I beat you.
Come on. You cried at this movie?
Matchy was keeping a tally during the movie.
Leap of faith.
The fucking robot. Oh my gosh.
Oh, the robot. My daughter's obsessed with Penny Parker. She can't find enough Penny Parker. She's so obsessed.
She's the best.
Listen, I would prefer to live in a culture that could produce like original stories where we weren't stuck in this like stasis of like telling the same children's story over and over and over. But I guess if we have to do it, this was a really fresh take on it.
The gauntlet's fucking down on this. Yeah.
It was a fresh superhero movie. And I agree with you, Merlin. Like my biggest complaint about any of these like franchise movies or reboots or any of this kind of stuff is like, I always think of it as checklist filmmaking where they start before there's, you know, think of the new Star Trek movie, the J.J. Abrams Star Trek movies, which are real, those movies really bug me. But you know that before there was a draft of the script or they had any concept or any ideas for that movie, they sat down with a checklist and they were like, okay, what do we got? Star Trek. We got to say, beam me up, Scotty. We got to say, I'm a doctor, not a blank. We got to get the phasers to fall. We got to get, you know what I mean? Like,
Yeah. All those look, it's like each one's like a little comfort meal. Yeah. Like all ticking off all the boxes.
Right. And then as a viewer, there's a little cat and mouse game of when are they going to say it? When are they going to say it? There, we said it. And they're going to, you know, have a big sting of music or whatever. Like, And this movie, I agree with you. This movie was great. Like who puts on their Spider-Man checklist the ice cream, you know, the melted ice cream thing, right? Like that was pretty funny.
I don't think there were any. I mean, there's check marks in terms of like the hero's story of, okay, he puts the suit on, but other than that, like he's like, with great power comes, don't even finish that
sentence. I know.
And when they're listing all of the tragedies that went through, like for me it was my Uncle Ben, and just when a spider noir or whatever is like, for me it was my Uncle Benjamin, like they're just that's one of my favorites.
The wind follows me and it smells like rain.
Did you catch that was Nicolas Cage?
Yes.
Yeah, it was. I don't know. I mean, this doesn't need my praise, but like just the fact that they let's be honest, they did a ton of the you know, checking off that they did. But like, so I said this on a Slack, I think in The Incomparable, but like, I don't know if I've ever seen a mainstream movie that felt quite as aggressively fresh as this did while I was watching it. But also the thing that's really hard to pull off is this is also without question the nerdiest Marvel related movie ever. No question. There's even a scene where you can see when you see up on the display, you see all those numbers connecting together. Those are all nerd code for the different Marvel universes. Like right now we live in 616 and like all of those pointing together. That's so deeply nerdy. All of these really weird, fringy, but all at the same time, I would argue easily one of the most artistic. I mean, everything else looks so wooden.
How did you guys feel about the text on the screen? I felt like that was one choice that I understand that, like, you can't have a movie where it's really fresh and they're reinventing things and like every artistic choice that they make. But for me, the one of the artistic choices that I wasn't into was the amount of, like, literally, like, writing text on the screen as though it was a comic book where, you know, when someone would skid to a halt and then it would, the dust would spell out skid.
Well,
a yellow
box is usually, like, you know, in that case, internal monologue. Like, when he's running through the, why is everything so loud? Why are these voices in my head? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm fine with it. I'm fine with it, not least because it was so fast. It went by so fast.
I could have done without it.
Okay, fair enough.
I could have done with slightly less. It's kind of when a show, like, cracks the fourth wall, but they don't want to break it all mm-hmm. the way, and it's like, it's a half failure. But it was kind of like the thing of, like, okay, you didn't need Bagel. You didn't need a gigantic womp. But it was I liked it when it was a subtle thing and someone skids to a halt. I loved all that subtle stuff because people, I agree with you, Merlin, it is the nerdiest movie I think I have ever seen outside of, like, Scott Pilgrim in terms of comic book movies. But it's also, I think, the most accessible superhero movie since The Dark Knight.
That's the thought I didn't get to finish.
It is the nerdiest.
No. But that's all I was going to say. It is the nerdiest. But it's also the most challenging. Yet, it is still arguably, I don't know if it's the most accessible. I mean, it's probably something like Captain America is a lot more accessible. But this is outside the MCU. This is Sony. But isn't it funny that, like, somebody has really thrown down the gauntlet with this in terms of, like, what we would expect of this. But it was funny, like, watching YouTube videos about this, because, of course, I'm watching YouTube videos about this. They'll show little scenes from this that are just electric. And then you'll see, like, an actor in his 30s loping around with CG, and you're like, wow, that looks so community theater next to this. You know, this is so lively. Yeah, I loved it.
I mean, I was serious when I was like, for extra credit, watch Venom, because it's one of the other movies that isn't in the MCU, and they didn't really get it's not a good movie. It's very bad, but I love it because it's almost started like, oh yeah, we're gonna write a basic superhero movie, and then they realized, but we don't need to, no one's going to put this into anything, so let's just fucking make something weird. And it's not a movie written by a committee. They know that it's that Venom is a failure as a franchise, that the MCU is eventually taking it over. So it was like, well, whatever. And this felt the same way.
Isn't Venom made like $1 billion though? Like wasn't it like a monster box office success?
Yes, but they did not expect that. It was panned so hard when it came out by critics, but everyone was like, oh, this is a fun, stupid thing. Okay.
Chapo wasn't crazy about it.
Did they backdoor some sort of like Chinese state ideology in it, so it got like a big international release?
I didn't know that.
That's like what happened with like the world, like World of Warcraft. Like if you watch that movie, it's like or Pacific Rim or a few of these other movies, they've like backdoored so much like Chinese state propaganda into those films and mythology and things like that. That it's like because they're gaming the system so they can get a wide theatrical release in China.
Who specifically said, let's take some Chinese stuff and get it in a way that Americans can be tricked into not noticing it? Who made that decision?
I assume the studio is like, okay, we're going to spend
$1 billion. The studio sends a memo that says, make this more Chinese.
Yeah, basically. So I think that the studio, these movie studios know that they can. If the movie gets, so the state controls what movies get distributed in China. Mm-hmm. And I think that the movie studios know this game now where they're like, if we backdoor enough sort of state approved Chinese mythology and party propaganda like into the film, it's going to get like a monster wide release in China, and it's going to do really well in international box office. Todd, I don't know what I'm talking about. Todd should tell us more about this, but I guarantee you, I saw World of Warcraft. We went with a bunch of friends who were like big Warcraft fans, and that movie was a real piece of shit. But I saw when I was watching it, I was like, damn, like there's so much like Chinese creation mythology in this movie. And I was like, I bet they're going for the international box office. And sure enough, if you look at the numbers that movie did, it was kind of a bomb in the US, but it was just a beast in China. It made so much money in China.
I mean, there's a difference between playing to an international audience and putting weird state ideology. Like, they recut a ton of Captain America to just play better internationally because they're like, okay, no one knows this.
They won't know these
some
references.
Some people did
or something.
Indeed forget Pearl Harbor, so we're going to take out some references from that. So that I buy. I don't know about catering specifically to. I mean, I don't know. Aren't they? I don't know. Someone, by someone, I mean Todd, please help.
Send a tweet to @hotdogsladies if you know anything about this.
I got a question for you though, Max. We gotta cut out soon. You tell me you didn't cry when Thor died in the Star Trek movie at the beginning.
When Thor died?
When George Kirk dies, you didn't cry about that?
No. I didn't. I was confused.
I thought that was so affecting.
Really? I was so confused. I was so confused
because
I was
they're
like,
"They're rushing her off the ship."
I don't, you know what? I have to go back. I only saw those Star Trek movies one time each, and I guess I should probably go back and rewatch them. But I was so disoriented by how wrong everything was, and I was like, I had my, you know, I was like, I had my antennas up, and I did not cry. No,
I did not cry. Did you cry when Thor died?
I don't remember.
Thor dies at the beginning.
I don't remember anything.
It's a Chris crossover. Dun, dun, dun. Chris crossover. That's stupid. Now, that'd be funny if they put Chris Cross in a Star Trek movie.
Mm-hmm.
They wear their pants backwards in their youths. Boom, boom, boom.
What if we got... Okay, I'm just thinking back about our Make Candy Great Again, and if we were
Make
to
America
sort of...
Make America Candy Again!
Backdoor... If we were to sort of backdoor some Chinese propaganda, like maybe when you unwrap your root beer barrels, it's got some sort of statement about party unity in there. I mean,
okay.
I mean, I think that would give us some convertible notes.
Oh.
Who's going to notice? Who's going to notice? These people aren't going to even read their fortunes. They're not going to know somebody's tracked at a Chinese cookie factory. They won't even know.
Or, okay,
anymore.
What about this? What about this? Wall-themed candy, right? Because that's going to appeal to everyone. That's going to hit our base. And trust me, the Chinese are going to be heavily into that.
It's the only candy that's visible from space.
You know, we've talked about a lot of things, but haven't you guys, since it comes out, thought about the title of Bandersnatch and just thought it was like a basically a convict vagina?
Convict vagina.
Yeah, I didn't know. No, it's like a bandit snatcher.
It sounds like Cockney rhyming slang for something vagina related.
It's okay. I just wanted to make sure.
Caught catching me bandit snatch.
I've been thinking about it for 2 hours.
Governor, there's a bandit snatch on the loose in the lorry.
Oi, get your torch in the lorry, Gov. What's all this in? What's this you're bringing contraband in your bandit snatch? Bandersnatch. That sounds adorable.
Oh, it does.
It's a tiny, tiny little vagina of a thing.